Good evening and welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Elizabeth and I am an alcoholic. Housekeeping, we will only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. You can sign up for email or listen to previously recorded meetings on our website at simpleactions.net. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. Do we have any newcomers? Great. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundation of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that the book Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism based on simple actions. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA Simple Action, the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 11. And please welcome our panel. We have Jeannie and Casey. I'm going to read the first paragraph on page 85, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on each reading. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Page 85, step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. Who would like to share first?
Well, I would. Okay. Just get it over with. My name is Jeannie and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jeannie.
You know, prayer and meditation are our principal means of concern, contacting with God as we understood him. When I first got sober, I had a higher power, but not really. I didn't want to talk about God. I was really mad at him. And he had taken away something that was near and dear to me. And I had a horrible childhood, so I blamed him for that, and then I blamed him for other things. So my thought on step 11 was, you know, I didn't meditate. I didn't stop. I didn't pause. I didn't do the things I needed to do because I didn't want to pray the way the book is talking about us praying. Prayer meditation for me was not something, I thought it said medication. So, I mean, you know, and that's how sick I was when I first got here. I jokingly say something about the coffee. I want you to know when I first got sober, I could not hold a full cup of coffee. I had the shake so bad. I had that need to drink that just over-consumed my whole body. It was just awful. And I thought I was going to throw up. So I thought, well, I don't know how I'm going to figure that out. The other thing is I rebelled against God because I felt God left me. And when I studied this step, I realized that God never left. I left him. And I had felt like God never listened to my prayers, but I wasn't praying with anything with sincerity. I prayed because people always said that, you know, when I first got sober, they'd come up to me and they'd say, honey, just keep praying. I mean, you know, I said to myself, prayer is not going to make what I got going on go away. It just wasn't. I was convinced of it. And I felt there was no God whatsoever. I believed in prayer, but not really. I became aware of facts that blocking prayer from my heart, I did begin to let God come in charge, but it was not until a long time after being sober. And I couldn't do that because how can you do that when you play God? You can't do both. And I really had to come to grips with that. You know, like being an alcoholic, I just mimicked everybody else because I was in a meeting with them. I just thought, well, okay, I'll just say my name. I didn't believe I was really had the problem with drinking. I thought I was insane. That was easier. I just know that I've had my prayers different. I've had a lot of wonderful, blessed things that have happened in my life. I've had a lot of tragedies in my life, but never was I ever alone. And this prayer allows me to remember that I don't do this alone. This program is meant to be done with everybody, no matter where we're at. We pick the phone up, go to a meeting, share with somebody, and do the parts that we're talking about and get into the steps and try to work at that one.
Casey.
Hey everybody, my name is Casey. I'm an alcoholic and an addict.
Hey Casey.
And I have a home group and a service position and a sponsor, and I sponsor women and I do all of the things surrounded by a community of people. And I'm thankful to be here. And if you're new, I strongly suggest that you do those things too. So I'm going to cheat because I didn't come prepared, and she has this really lovely book. So when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. So I feel like a baby when it comes to step 11, as I spent a lot of time in early recovery, very busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I stayed so busy that I didn't really have to do step 11 because I was so busy. So I did step 11, like kind of with like people around me and like telling on myself, but there's really nothing like following the instructions in the book. And I am not awesome at when I retire at night, constructively reviewing my day, but when I'm in hot water and I'm at odds with a lot of people and things around me, I suddenly remember when we retire at night. And I never will forget like the first time that it really clicked for me was some big drama was going on in my life and I was really shaken up, and I called my friend and we were talking about it, and she was like, let's open the big book. And she opened it to page 86 and literally walked through this paragraph with me. But what I love about it is like, I can't identify anything that I am. I am ever only angry. And really I'm rarely angry. I'm usually scared. And I don't know how to show any other emotion than like rage and anger. It's actually like, I've been looking at that a lot lately by no choice of my own. Thanks God. And it's really ugly to see how like kind of emotionally immature, not even kind of grossly emotionally immature I am. And I'm so acutely aware that I am no more capable of managing that form of communication than I am of managing my drinking. And it's pretty leveling, but what one of my favorite parts about this is what could we have done better? And like, I love that because it, like everything about this book is solution oriented. And like, for me, like I've come to a place in my sobriety, and I really think it's because of the steps that I have taken towards forming a relationship with my higher power and practicing leaning on him, that I no longer see flaws. I see opportunities for growth. Mm-hmm. And they're painful. I mean, extremely painful to really see myself square in the face. But now like I'm excited that I don't have to hold on to this anymore, you know, and that, and it still lingers. And then I say, watch myself act poorly and hurtful to myself and everyone around me and, you know, promptly apologize. But like, I know that, that as a direct result of my relationship with my higher power, I'm learning to be a better mother, a better employee, a better employer, a better daughter, a better aunt, just all the way across the board. And I am incredibly thankful. And a lot of this for me was, I didn't latch on to the spirituality of this program. I had some baggage from the past that I had to let go of. And I am very busy. I'm like, even now my life is abnormally busy, but I do know that that's like a detriment for me because I like to stay so busy that I don't have to sit still, you know, and I have to force myself to really sit still. But the benefits of doing that and like just being still and opening myself up to just quietness and meditation, it's very rewarding. It's more rewarding than I ever thought it was going to be. And what really urged me, my sponsor told me when I first came here to like find strong women in Alcoholics Anonymous and stick with them. And my friends really picked up on the spirituality thing and practicing the spirituality thing while I floated over here in left field. And they just loved me anyway, a lot further than me. I mean, a lot sooner than I did. And there just came a time to where meetings, as far as my sobriety goes, and even just as far as like the chaos in my life began to not be enough for me. Like I needed to reach for something more. And I think, I absolutely love sponsorship, but I think that I was sponsor dependent almost to a form to where like, all like if a problem arose in my life, I would call my sponsor. And when I hung the phone up with my sponsor, that was all I did with it. You know, so that moment of like saying like, what's your opinion? You know, dude, God, you know, like, what do you think? Like was never like, I just stayed really busy telling everybody how I felt, how I thought, what it did. Blah, 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 blah. And I still have a tendency to do that, but inevitably I find where I just need to get quiet. And I'm really thankful, to be in a place where I want to do that. And obviously I still keep in touch with my sponsor, but my sponsor doesn't, you know, my sponsor practices. I can't speak tonight. Prayer and meditation as well, just like the book says. So, and I had a lot of prejudices against religion when I came in to this room. My mom was very involved with the church, and her church and her God have a lot of rules and rules that most little teenage girls don't like, and or 43-year-old girls. They don't like that either. So, but it works for her, but I had to kind of undo that. And I did that by being angry and not doing this part. But I know without a shadow of a doubt that I do not know, and I probably will never know on my own how to wrest satisfaction out of this world if I only manage well. And I'm a phenomenal manager, just so you know. I manage very well, but I can never manage to be satisfied while I do it. Mm. And alcoholics, like the prayer and meditation, teaches me how to be satisfied while I manage, you know, just navigating Walmart, you know, or family relationships or whatever it may be. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing.
Thanks for sharing. Okay, the next reading is page 86. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking. especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance. For after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it.
Mm-hmm. I have a lot of things that are underlined in this section. One of the things that I used to carry around, it was enough to be an alcoholic, but I did feel sorry for myself. And I used that. It was a crutch for me. It was something that I just really, you know, anytime, anybody, anywhere, I would tell this terrible story. And my sponsor used to say, and she was 60 years old, I was 26. So you have to think about that. That was just so sad. I used to say things just to shock her, you know, because she was 60 years old. But there were motives, and I had no self-seeking motives. I had devious motives. I was going to get even with you. If you did something to me, I did it back to you. Prayer and meditation allows me to view the whole day. There are some days that when I do something wrong, I don't admit to it that day. I will wait a while because I think, oh, it wasn't really that bad. But it was. But, you know, I use my own judgment instead of others. I measured my feelings by yours. If you were having a good day, I was having a better day, you know, that kind of thing. And it became ridiculous after a while. And people in this program, they know what's going on. You know, God really does inspire us to get better. But to know the things, the character defects, to know that those are going to get better by the prayer and meditation. But we have to ask God to do that. And I wasn't so willing. I, as a Catholic, have not been on my knees except tonight to get my dress button by my husband. I just don't do that kneeling. I kneeled for years and God never forgave me. I thought, well, you know, here I am kneeling to you. Why isn't my life getting better? And I had some real prejudice about religion and the upbringing, and my mother was a devout Catholic. So everything I did was wrong, but the way she lived was right. So, you know, I there were mixed messages. And I'm not one of these people that just relax. I swear, you know, I'm about as relaxed as I'm going to be tonight, but when I get going in my day, I got too many things. I burn pans, I make burns on the ceiling because I'm not paying attention because I got too many things going. And it was like you were talking about, I just keep everything busy. I think also the dishonesty. And you know, when I first sobered up, it was honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And I always thought, oh, I'm so honest. So if you asked me a question, I would tell you the real answer. And I hurt people's feelings when I did that because I wasn't as kind as I could have been. I was just brutal, honest, that's wrong. But I've gotten better with that. I think that just comes with age. The other thing is that I do journal every night. And like I said, sometimes you can journal and write things on a paper that you don't want to remember because it's on a paper. I mean, my mind just is not like it's not a good neighborhood to go to. That's about it.
Casey.
So when I first got sober, I read the big book each morning with a lady that's now one of my friends. And we used to start with this on a waking, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. And it, like, we've learned to memorize this. Mm-hmm. And it's funny how when I would go throughout my day, little phrases from here would, you know, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance and or our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. And but here we ask God for we may not be able to determine which course to take, and here we ask God for inspiration, intuitive thought, or decision. And this is the one that for me, like, I have these little, like, key prayers, like, show me how to show up, like, show me how to show up, show me how to show up. And I say it all the time. I say it when I'm uncomfortable in a meeting. I say it when I'm in the car with my daughter. You know, I say it when my mom is driving me nuts. Like, I say it all the time. And it's like, God has this invisible muzzle. It's just for me. And when he asks me, when I say, show me how to show up, he just puts it on my mouth. And it's, and like, without any effort, nothing comes out and things go so much better. The mind, however, still says a lot of really ugly things, but I think it's great improvement that I no longer act on these. And like, I, and after some years of this, I'm learning how to actually enjoy. I mean, I love my family. I do, but there's a lot of chaos. And it's healthy, just like normal old people and young people chaos, and then middle-aged woman chaos, because I'm sure I bring a whole bunch of chaos to the picture too. I just don't want to talk about that part. But I can begin to kind of at moments step back and just like appreciate that, just how absolutely absurd the situation is. And that's not of me at all. Like, I'm sorry. So the period of meditation concludes with that we be shown all throughout the day what our next steps be, and we'd be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. And I do have to say that every single morning, you know, when I wake up, I take those moments and to just, I don't always read this, but to say, you know, like, just, can you do this today? Because I'm not feeling like I can. That's kind of how it's been lately. But it when I genuinely turn my day over to my higher power, sadly, probably by the time I get up from that cup of coffee, I've taken it back. But I do. But I do give it away in the morning. And that's just like, I am acutely aware that there are a lot of really good ideas out there that aren't mine. And there's lots of ways of living that are probably healthier than the way that I've been shown, and I'm excited to learn what those are, so I can put my best foot forward. And I really don't tire as easily. My capacity, even for that anger that I talk about, is about 25 minutes now, and then I need a nap. What I realize is that the damage, like, after such behavior is longer, you know, and it's exhausting. You know, and it, just that level of energy to put it into something that's so fruitful. When I first got sober, somebody said, like, I was so worried about, I had a lot of problems when I got sober. My bottoms are pretty ugly. I don't come here with cars, and, you know, my life's still intact. So, I had a lot of problems, but I was worried about something, and somebody asked me if I was going to remember the problem a year from now. And if I wasn't, then maybe it wasn't, you know, it wasn't really worth putting into so much energy into it. And sometimes I catch myself still practicing that little, I don't know why, that little God shot or whatever that was given to me that day, because most of the stuff that I get upset about, really upset about, I'm probably not going to remember it in a week. I'm just, I really want freedom from self-will. I really want that. And honestly, like, my life is beautiful, and it's also a little scary. Like, I've got my 91 grandmother's getting ready to move in with me, and my mom already lives there, and I have my 13-year-old niece, and I'm just like, That's the way I feel about the whole thing. Just mm-hmm. deep inhale. And then there's this little voice in the back of my head. It's like, and y'all ended up at my house? You know, like, I'm so sorry that of all the people in the world, because I have been known to be rather irresponsible. I say that jokingly. I'm really thankful that they're at my house, but it is a stark difference between mm-hmm. 12 years ago in my life. But honestly, like, I am, so I'm humbled by the opportunity, and I'm also very fearful because I don't want to mess it up. And that's a lot of personalities under one roof mm-hmm. and a lot of changes. And I'm anxious about, you know, just all of those different, my granny irritates my mom so bad. And my mother irritates me so bad. So I'm like, whoa, this is going to be good times. Granny's going to be great because she can't hear us. So, but my mom and I, we're going to have to figure it out. So, and even just, you know, with the stress of the move and like all of these things, like today I was actually so there's construction going on in my house to make room for all of this change that's happening in October. And I am that construction worker. So, I was tired and, I had kind of like my mom, I had to set a rule, just so you know, to my mother that she's not going to be Granny's caretaker and like giving her a bath and all this stuff. And my mom's like, yes, I am. I'm like, and what are you going to do when she falls? Fall on her? You know, like, I'm like, mm-hmm. it's because I'm immediately, just so you know, my mom and my grandmother have both fallen in the bathtub. And now they, like, one has a broken arm, one has a broken hip, and how am I going to care for them? This is where I'm at. Okay. But she's not here yet. Okay. We just decided like a week ago she was coming, and I am already like projecting way out and like how it's going to go wrong. So I need to do what I do best, which is manage the situation before it ever gets there. And so I started to do that today. And I was reading this step as we're coming to speak on it tonight. And like this huge epiphany came that I owed my mother an apology. And said, you know, and so I went out and said, look, I don't, you know, if you're going to care for Granny, like that, I think that's great. And I don't want you to feel like, you know, I'm going to be hounding you and you're going to be in trouble with me and all of these things. You know, I was scared that you're going to hurt yourself. And like the reality of how hard that would be difficult just kind of freaked me out. And I was mean. And so I'm sorry. And she probably is going to hurt herself trying to care for my granny. And the reality is it's going to be perfectly fine no matter what happens. Like, I don't know why I jump off into this, like I just go down this cliff of all of these things that I know are going to happen and how I can prevent them. And it's just really destructive for the moment here and now. And so I am extremely humbled and that I even have the wherefore just to say, you know what, this is not what I want this to be like. Cause I have the capability to make this entire arrangement completely miserable for everybody, including myself. And I do not want to do that. And I really think that left to my own devices, that's exactly what I'll do. And so I'm remaining humble and just like really asking God for inspiration and to show me how to show up. Right. Because I don't know I have no idea how to show up for that. And it's thankfully, isn't that crazy? Like all of my blessings, just so you know, most days in my mind are a real hassle. Like my beautiful job and my beautiful house and, you know, like, God, what a pain. And I realized that about myself the other day. I'm like, you are so incredibly ungrateful. Like, but it's just lifing, you know, I don't know how to life. It's very scary. And I am thankful for everything that I have. It just all scares me a whole lot. Keeping it, losing it, you know, all of it. It's just like a little overwhelming. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Casey. Okay, our next reading is on page 87. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no request for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us had wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why.
Okay. My biggest thing is I have underlined is my own selfish ends. Prayer and meditation takes a lot of work when we're not used to doing it. I mean, I prayed a lot, but it was because I was forced to. And then when I got sober, people would say, you need to pray. And I'd say, okay, that works for you, but you're not me. So why would I do what you're telling me? That kind of thing. And I was very rebellious. I really, really was. It took a lot of years to get that rebellion out because I knew more than you. And I had lived a terrible life and you hadn't lived it. So how would you know? And I kept going around trying to identify with other people and didn't seem like everybody had the same circumstance. But I realized that as time goes on, that you do run into yourself and you do hear your own story. I think when I lost my child, I think one of the saddest things was I already had him playing baseball. I had all boys. That was my big thing. Either we play baseball or play football, whatever, because I had enough boys to do that with. And I was all for that. I was really that type of gal. I was ready to be right out there with them. And when I lost the second child, I stayed in shock for a long time. I also got sober during that time, which was not easy. Grief comes in such odd ways. And when that came, it just consumed me. I show up at meetings, I would do what I had to do, but there was no feelings. I still think at times today, I can get into that role. If I don't have to care about you, then I don't care. And that's not a good place for me to be as an alcoholic because I do care. Showing you that care will take a while. I'm just not that kind of a person. I'm glad to see you and I like the hugs, but I always figured there was a motive behind everybody's thoughts. And when I first got to this area, when they welcome you into a meeting, I thought, oh my God, these people are gonna hug me. I don't know them. How dare they take that freedom? But that was a lot of my own self-will. My thoughts in AA's way were not the same. But you know what? There was nothing else on the block and nobody else was helping me. Getting sober and staying sober has been quite difficult for me for many years, only because I did not think it was going to work. I kept waiting for the other shoe to, I kept waiting for some circumstance that would warrant me to drink again, because it just would be easier. And when I kept going to meetings and people kept saying, you'll be okay, honey, just don't drink. And I kept thinking, go away. People took me under their wing, even when I didn't want them to. I didn't want them to waste the time. I didn't want them to waste the energy. And I didn't want to have to get to know people and then have to leave. And that's how I felt. I felt worthy of being sober, but it was after about 10 years. And I don't say that because you have to be 10 years. I'm just saying that was how it was for me. I kept the walls up. I kept myself protected. I learned how to survive. So when I got to this program, I said, I'm going to survive at the best. And I did. But I grew up with a lot of older people, not older in sobriety, but older in age. And I thought, they have no idea what it's like to be 26. They're already grown. Their kids are gone and, you know, blah, blah, blah. They don't have problems like I had. And I struggled by myself silently for a long time. And this getting into the prayer, when I started going to seminars, I started going to retreats on prayer. And that's how I learned some of the stuff. And they said, you know, Jeannie, you don't have to make a big project out of this, just do it. And I said, okay, but not. Because everything in this program, yeah, but. And I canceled it out when I said that. You know, I was a sober alcoholic, yeah, but. And then so things in my life were just cut short and to the point. And it says many of us waste a lot of time doing that and it doesn't work. You know, that's how I felt. There was a lot of things that I did. People seemed to get better. They seemed to be having shorter time than I did. And how come I was here? Blah, blah, blah. I just felt sorry for myself, and I liked it. And I like staying in that. Thank God I got away from it, but it's been a lot of work. And at night, I do say to God, please take whatever I'm feeling right now away, and I want it now. It's like I'm demanding the man to take the time to do this when he's already done it. I just haven't allowed it. I did not want to give up drinking because it was a thing that calmed the nerves. Drinking gave me a lot, gave me courage. I could dance, talk. I could do anything once I had that first drink. But what kept me sober for as long as I've been sober now is that I'm so afraid that if I take even the drop, I'll be off and running. And I don't know that I got another sobering up. I know physically, I don't see that. But mentally, I've already been crazy. So, I don't even have to drink to be crazy. And that was one thing that I wanted to take care of right away when I got here. When I saw Restorative to Sanity, I thought, oh, I like that one. I don't want to do these other steps. Why mess around with that? And I certainly wasn't going to tell you alcohol defeated me, because I was not one to give that up. So I'm grateful that we come to this point. And what my point is that I have to humble myself today to pray that God does help me and I allow him to help me. It's not just me doing it, it's him and I together. And we're on good name basis. I can talk to him. I can be a little bit more at ease. I'm not mad at it.
I really like what Jeannie said about talking to him. My prayers are not traditional prayers. And I have prayers that I absolutely love. Some of them are in this book, and some of them we say out loud all the time. And there's St. Francis prayer. But my relationship with my higher power is just like a moment where I can really tell the truth, and I think just by nature, like I don't really ask for a whole lot from myself, like a lot of times it's just telling the truth of that I am scared or I'm miserable or whatever, help me show up show me what I'm supposed to do. Like I was in a relationship for a really long time and I was like, show me a sign. God's got lots of signs, y'all. Yes, he does. Lots of, I should have been like, show me how to read. He gave me lots of signs. Like what I love about the relationship with my higher power that I have now is that, I saw numerous signs and then, chose to stay, or maybe it'll be this, or maybe it'll be that. And I'm like, my higher power is not going to disown me because I didn't go the way, that he would have preferred. Like, I hate it when somebody asks me, like, do you think this is God's will for you? Particularly when it's something that I already am questioning. Mm-hmm. Is it good for me? Like, what do you think this is God's will for you? No, I don't. Thank you. But what I like is that because we, like, deep down inside, if I'm going to be honest with myself, I know, I already know the answer. I'm not going to be abandoned because I don't, I don't, like act on the first right instinct. And there's a lot of freedom in being able to be wrong and being able to grow or maybe just not even being strong enough, relationships are difficult, all relationships. But about that, I recently said like a tiny prayer that was for me. And I just kind of voiced it. So I went camping recently. My dad and his girlfriend went, they were beside me, they're in their 70s. My niece and I went. And like all the things that happen camping happen, the big pop-up rainstorm, it was phenomenal. It was a good weekend. I was the only mom there that was a parent. And my dad is like 12. That was also a parent. And it was fun, but it was exhausting. But while we were there, we're at this campground, which is beautiful. It's Kerr Dam. If anybody wants to go camping, it's an awesome campground. And there's all these families. And so like, I'm kind of like watching, thinking like, man, I bet this is so much easier with, and everybody was having a really good time, but if y'all tried to put up three tents by yourself lately, like it's not easy.
No.
And then the pop-up rain, whatever. So I was kind of sulky about that because everybody wants a partnership, like a genuine, true partnership, And like I'm going through, you know, like a breakup, and we've been together for like a long time. Everything's just awkward. And so I sent a text message to one of my friends that just got married. And I was just like, I want a family. And she was like, well, mine. And I was like, no, just the helpful togetherness husband part and the cooking part. And she was like, nope, you get all of it or you get none of it. And basically she told me to go love my dog and be thankful for what I've got. Like 3 days later is when I found out my granny was coming. And I was like, God, kind of not what I meant by family, you know, not what I meant at all. So like, it's so funny about like throwing things out there. It's clearly what I'm supposed to have, right? It is God's will. Like there's nothing wrong with that. But I found it very ironic that, you know, I'm daydreaming about family. But I will tell you, the nanosecond that my grandmother came, like I found out that she was coming, like my intentions and my motives and my like spunk to get out of bed in the morning completely like turned around. And like, I am excited about this and anxious about it. But like at that, it was definitive, because I will tell you, I may know things are not God's will for me, but I am most certainly not going to show my granny that. Like, and so like all of those things that I had kind of been struggling with and just like that were just like severed for me. And I'm really thankful for it, because if anybody's ever, you know, had a heartache, they're kind of worrisome and they stick around a long time and they show up and all, but it was like gone overnight. And so, God has a funny way of working in my life, and I'm really thankful for it. Would have never imagined that my life would look anything like it likes now, like it looks now, or that I would enjoy it so much. Like I am so incredibly thankful to watch a very 13 year old like operate in my house. New thing, I'm learning how to speak. Like, so wonderful. I'm interpreting great. I'm doing very well. I think they should put it up on Duolingo as like one of the new languages. But it's funny to me now. And when my daughter was 13, like I didn't think it was funny at all. It was not funny, you know. And now it is. And I'm really thankful that I don't do it perfectly all of the time, but I really am thankful. Like she was so huffy. That's the language I call it. So huffy. And I was like, she was leaving to go for a trip, and she's had a phenomenal summer, a really awesome summer. Her family, she's been traveling with family, but like, I am like the like truck stop where she comes and bathes and like, re-ups on all of her toiletries and like bring some really stinky clothes home. Like, and it's just for like a matter of days. And we're like packing again for this other like gigantic trip. So we're packing for this trip. My favorite part of all of that is finding everything that she's lost, that, you know, so like I sent her to Alaska without a coat. Sorry, I bought one, she lost it. But like during this entire time, she's like, you know, and finally I was just like, look, you know, this is not my idea of a fun Saturday night. Okay. So if you could do something with the volume and what you're huffing at me while I'm helping you, that would be really helpful. And we didn't say anything and we went on about our business. And then like by the end of that packing, I got it. And I was like, very good. Like high five. She was not happy. I didn't get a high five for it, but she did participate in a little less loud huffing. I'm not capable of that by myself. And before I packed, recently I threw an all out adult tinter tantrum because she lost bathing suit bottoms, all out adult tinter tantrum. It was really ugly. It set a bad example as a parent. It set a bad example as an adult. It set probably a bad example for a toddler. It was really ugly. And she said to me, she was getting ready to leave. Okay. So it's like this stressful moment because I'm all freaked out because I, you know, money and blah, all of the things that she could care less about. And she had lost a bunch of stuff. And so she was leaving and I was like, we can't leave like this. Like, I know you probably don't want to talk to me right now, but we're going to need to get on the same page. So just hit me with it. I know I hurt your feelings. What happened? Like, what do you need to say to me? And she goes, your sarcasm is so hurtful that it doesn't make me feel like I lost my bathing suit. It makes me feel like I'm the biggest inconvenience in your life would be better without me. Mm. And I was like, that's pretty much all I could say. And so that little prayer, show me how to show up. like runs through my head. And I said, I will work on that. And that's all I said. And then I went through the next 2 days of that attitude in my life, raising my own daughter, just like spilling. I could finally just see the way that I had been behaving. And it was so inappropriate. And I had the opportunity to thank her for very bravely and gracefully telling me that I'm hurtful and I'm really inappropriate. And also to realize, like, I don't have to keep this attribute. Like, I don't have to do this anymore. And all of this is my willingness to open myself up for change. And like, my higher power has done the rest. I have phenomenal people in my life that also can lovingly say, hey, you probably are really struggling here. And I have the strength to be willing to look at it and to really want something different. And then, you know, like a couple of days after that, I had to tell her that I kept up with my first coat when I was 37 and I'm only 43 now. Like, I don't know why I'm mad at her about bathing suit bottom when I locked my keys in my car three or four. I had locked my keys in my car so much, like as of like 3 years ago, that the pop lock guy knew me by name and he knew my friends by name. Are you at Shannon's? You know, like, are you at your dad's? You know, like, and I asked him, I was like, do you have one of those hide a key things? He said, ma'am, if I did, I would not sell you one. Like, he just like, you know, and here I am like, what a hypocrite, you know, and incapable of being able to see my own stuff. And then also making my niece feel like there's something like grossly wrong with her because she lost the bathing suit bottom. Like, I literally wear one pieces for the same problem. But just being able to see myself, being able to hear that or even have the thought to ask. And then like, not like, if I had have asked my daughter that, and I was younger, some of it is just getting older, but I think a lot of it is just opening myself up to my higher power and realizing like, I don't always know what the problem is, but I can definitely see that whatever's going on is not, I'm pretty sure this isn't God's will, you know? and I had a lot of epiphanies through that experience. And one of them was like, if she went to a party and got in trouble, and I should say when she goes to a party and gets in trouble or there's things going on around her, she will not call me because she's not supposed to be there. You know, and like, as a parent, like, I am screwing it up if you would hide something so serious, you know, like if something was seriously wrong, you couldn't come to me. And it's because I act like a maniac behind a bathing suit bottom. You know, and that's not what I want. That's not what I want to be for her, but it's exactly what I am for her right now. So like, how do I change that? And so like, opening prayer and meditation, lots of prayer and meditation for me. So she came home from her next trip. She lost the coat. And I was like, I need to step outside, you know, and I just went outside and I stayed outside until I was no longer annoyed. And it didn't take very long, but I was just like, I was afraid to walk back in the house because I knew I was going to throw a bathing suit tantrum, you know, and I had to stay out there like long enough to wear. But like, I just, it was like, help me, help me, help me in the backyard, because I was pissed off. I was mad. Plus, I would like to add, it's like a couple $100 worth of stuff that she's lost. So like, I still feel very justified. And my brother's like, yeah, but the point is not that she's losing dollars. The point is that you want her to go out into this world and be able to mean and take care of herself. Are you teaching her that? Or are you teaching me? Thank you, Jeremiah. But I'm not teaching her that, you know, like, she doesn't care about the dollar value of her bathing suits. But she did go to the Outer Banks without one. So, and she did go to Alaska without code, you know, like I have a friend that's like, natural consequences. And, you know, there are natural consequences. So like, why do I have to be this gigantic authoritative figure that I'm just a monster? And really all it is me being afraid. Like, I am afraid of 5,000 things because I'm 15 years down the road. And trust me, her boss is not going to like this. You know, I am not in the room packing a 13-year-old for a trip. I'm always way off in left field, and it's heightened fear and it's out of love, but like, it's exhausting. and it just doesn't bring the best out in me. And this is, all of this has kind of come up for me like in the last 3 months, and like just really learning that, it, just seeing myself in a completely different light. And it's been a long time since I saw myself in a light that I disliked as much as the light I saw myself in when I came here, you know. And I really do not like this. But it's also completely different. Like I said before, when it came back, like, what could we have done different? Right. That is the key for me. Like, what could I have done different? And it's the same thing. Like, you know, well, like I have a satchel full of white chips, you know, but learning how to pick the phone up before, like when I want to drink, not to call somebody and tell them that I did drink, you know, it's the same thing. Like what could I have done different? And the next time I'm in the same situation, like it's a little, sorry. Next time I'm in the situation, same situation, like the thought of what could have I done different? Like, what can I do different? That like pops into my, so it's like, and now I feel like I'm rambling. So thanks.
Thank you, Casey. Hey, our next reading is on page 87. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in the morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination, which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers, which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. Jeannie?
Well, now it's getting deep. I do somewhat the same, but the only thing is I do the prayer meditation with my readings in the morning and also read the Al-Anon book so I can detach from my son. It talks about the prayers, and you know, my prayers were, God, could you get me out of this mess, or could you save me from this, or if I had an overdraft in the checking account, could you just wait a little while? Well, they don't do that today, so and I still bounce checks, so let's not go there. The other thing is that when I was early in recovery, I finally realized that I could go, and I went to a Catholic priest that was in recovery, and I told him all the sordid details of my fourth step. And all he could say to me after he got done, first of all, I was afraid I was gonna shock him. He was a priest, but he said, "No, honey, I've been through it all." I said, "Okay, here goes." And then I just dumped on him. And he gave me forgiveness, and he gave me the need to know the way I lived my life before I got sober was okay. And he didn't ask for mercy for me. He comforted me in a way another alcoholic would comfort you. It's just simply by, you know, putting his arm around me and told me he loved me and let it go with that. One of the greatest feelings I got out of that is that first, knowing he was a recovering alcoholic, and second, that he was in the program, and third was the fact that he cared genuinely for me. There was not a lot of words, just things that I said, and he kept looking at me, and of course I kept waiting for him to fall out of the chair, but he didn't, because my past was really very, very dysfunctional and very sordid, and I'm not proud of it. But you know, when you put enough alcohol into the Pope, he'll run around and be wild and crazy too. So, and with an alcoholic, it's not just the alcohol. There are some things that were forbidden that I did because they were. And if you told me no, I went right ahead and did it. I mean, that's my nature. And I still have a little bit of that. I haven't got it completely gone. There's still a little bit left. If someone says something about the big book or 12 and 12, you better have the page so I can look it up, because that's all I'm going to do. I'm going to check it out. And I don't quote anything from the books because I don't remember what page I'm on. I write everything down. I mean, I've done that for years. The other thing is knowing that God doesn't have to help me out of my messes today. I do live a good life, and he provides that for me, but he does it with no strings attached. I don't have to do certain things for God to be good in my life. It's just a lot of things that have just been miracles that have come around. There's been a lot of sad things. I just recently came through a rough time with my husband, who was taken to the hospital, but he wouldn't go to the hospital for 3 days. And finally I'd had enough. He couldn't breathe, and I just finally called 911. And one of the miracles of that, and I don't say this to be mean, but it's a nice thing that we can call, we're not drinking, we're not smoking, he's not smoking, I smoke. We're not taking pills, we don't got, you know, our farm, we don't have a pharmacy at the house. And I'm not shooting up or doing anything else. That was the miracle of this each time that poor Ed's gone to the hospital. But I mean, you use that as a stepping stone because it's going to get better. Because I told him, I said, his orders are no longer going to be understood. I'm going to make a decision and I'm going to do it. It's not going to be up to Ed. Things of that nature. But because we're both been married a long time, we'll celebrate 50 years in February. Mm-hmm. And to know each other for 3 weeks, that's really truly a miracle. And I didn't have a lot of words with him. He used the word trust me, and that's how my son was born. So, you know, we'll just go from there. The other thing is that to genuinely care is only come from God as I understand him, not as you understand him, and not as what I grew up with. I've got to clear that passage for that because I get very stuck on that. So, and I think that it talks about this in the 12 and 12. It's amazing what God does for us. But the other part is that if I accept it, not always fight it and let it happen, that makes this program work each and every time.
Thank you, Jamie.
So we're almost out of time, but I just really like this. There are many helpful books also. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have time for books before, but I do find that I need a lot of books.
Sure. Thanks, Casey. All right. Thank you, Casey and Jeannie. That's the end of our discussion portion. We're going to pass the seventh tradition basket. You can sign up for email on our website at simpleactions.net. We also have PayPal and Venmo that you can use. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting space for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? Pat?
Hi, Pat.
Thank you, Pat.
Alcoholic David.
David.
This group, Simple Actions, in this room on August 15th, we're going to have a supper and a speaker. Potluck at 6 p.m. Jerry Beam from Raleigh, North Carolina is going to come tell his story. It's open. Please show up. There's a bunch of flyers on that table. It would be great if you could. Thank you.
Anyone else? All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. There is literature available. It's over at the hand sanitizing station. And books are available for sale. The paperback stuff, the paper leaflets are free. If you need anything else, just see a member after the meeting. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. Or if you're shy, you can email info@simpleactions.net. Reminders. Smokers, please use the butt cam provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. The meeting after the meeting. All are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial. Closing. Everyone, give another hand for our now. Thank you to all who participated. After the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have a chance to say thank you to Jeannie and Casey. And Ryan has volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on page 164. Ryan.
Thanks for reading.
And one clarification, the supper and speaker, the speaker will be on Zoom that night as well. So I know someone had asked about that. All right, we're going to close in our seats with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Thanks, everybody.